Ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing it. The last bass drop of 2017. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free, thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. Squarespace! They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who doesn't even use the word best. In fact, he only buys his games at buy. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I like that. That was good. Hi. Also, listeners, I'm off the social media until February 2018, but I'm still available to you should you want to email me. Christian.Spicer@gmail.com is the best way to get in touch. So feedbacks, comments, criticisms, send me an email.
So here we are, Christian. We are at the end of 2017, and as is our tradition, we are doing our games of the year. We're going to do top five lists, as we do every year. But you famously, of course, do not like the term game of the year. You do not like calling something the best. You prefer favorite. Is that right?
You can have a best, but what we talk about, we are talking about our favorites. We are not talking about the best. So, yes.
Right. So we should say that right up front. We're talking about favorites and not best. And I think in 2017, even more than most years, that's going to be true because 2017 is such a big year for games. But, you know, Christian and I can't give you our best years, best games of the year.
We've given you our best years, dear audience. We have already given you our best years.
We can't give you our best years, but we have. We're tired and sad.
It's Friday night, by the way, guys. It's listening on the RSS. It is Friday night. Jeff and I are doing this. We have a great guest that's also volunteering his Friday night. I know that's what you're leading to, but
I was about to introduce him. But yes, we are recording this early because our regular release day is Christmas Day, and Christian and I both have families, as I'm sure a lot of you do, but I mean, everybody has a family, I guess. I don't know. It's not working out well tonight for me with the words. Anyway, we're recording this early is what I'm trying to tell you. And we have a great guest who has given up his Friday night to be with us. And he's our traditional game of the year episode, favorite game of the year episode guest, Anthony Taormina, one of our favorite guests. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I love this time of the year. I'm one of those people that I love reading people's lists. I love making my own lists. It's a great time. I don't know. It's just a fun time to like get people's recommendations. I like it. I'm happy to be here.
That Anthony is a dude who likes coming on this show.
There you go.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
Sure.
DLC this week, of course, you know, DLC always stands for downloadable canon, Daniel Christian. But this week, DLC is going to stand for determining our lists of champions because that's what we're going to do. We're going to do a top five. Anybody can do a top 10. It's easy to do a top 10.
Even though this year, that's hard too, but yes.
It's hard to do a top 10 in 2017. But you know what is even harder, Christian? Top five. And that's what we do here at DLC because we do not back down from the challenge. We will step up to the plate and give you our top fives, which I'm sure will infuriate everyone for different reasons, but that's okay. You can have three different perspectives. And then folks, as is tradition on the show, we're going to do another five games, which is not our 6 through 10. It is instead games that we think deserve another look at the end of the year, but we think you're probably not going to hear about on most people's games of the year list. It's games that are sort of diamonds in the rough or dark horses or pet games of ours that we would like to see mentioned again before we turn the page into 2018. And I love the fact that we do that because I think these games are really even more fun than talking about what everybody else is talking about, the sort of big, you know, games that come up at the end of the year. These games, I think, are games that deserve more love, and that's what we're going to give them here on DLC in our favorite game of the year episode. But also, The great thing about this episode is we get to use what I think is my favorite bumper. It comes from Sean Madigan, and you're going to hear it several times in this episode because it's the only episode of the year I get to play it, and I love it. Sean Madigan's DLC Game of the Year bumper.
Sampling.
It's my favorite part at the end, based on an incomplete sampling.
Catchy,
which is
and
very
factual.
Very important to note because we have not played every single game that came out this year. I don't think any human can. So you will get our favorites, the games that spoke to us, the games that we played, and we will get to that. But first, we're going to talk about 2017 as a year. It's winding down, and what a year it was. We always start our show with story of the week. This episode, we're going to start with story of the year. I don't have a jingle for that, so I guess I'm just going to have to do it. Story of the year. It's the story of the year. Story of the year. It's the story of the year.
Whoop, whoop.
There we go. So story of the year. What do you guys, Anthony?
Yep.
Let's start with you. What do you think is the story of 2017? What's the biggest story that sums up video games this year for you?
Oh man, that last I had one, and then I would say that the story that happened this year, or kind of like the conversation that happened this year that I think we are going to look back on as being the most significant, is the whole loot box microtransaction thing.
Yes. That is certainly a story that has happened throughout the year. It certainly heated up toward the end here.
Yes.
With all of the fervor around Star Wars Battlefront 2. But it really was all throughout 2017. There were games coming out constantly with loot boxes. And I think we're going to see that story continue into 2018, because now legislators are getting involved. And we just saw this week, Apple has changed its terms of service or its guidelines, I should say, for developers, and put in a new requirement. I don't know if they're going to require it. It certainly seems like a requirement in the guidelines to have app developers disclose your odds of getting a loot box if you have in-app purchases for any kind of randomized piece of digital goods. It's pretty crazy. So give me your 2 cents on loot boxes and what it means for this year in gaming, and what you think it's going to mean going forward.
Well, I think that the big story to the big development with all of this is that for a while, I feel like developers and publishers, the big ones at least, felt that they were kind of bulletproof, you know, that they could do whatever they really wanted to as far as monetizing a game and introducing different things. And I think the conversation developing around that type of stuff, and the strength that a strong community can have as far as like enacting change, it is going to lead to more of this feeling of developers and publishers understanding that, like, these are your consumers and your consumer should dictate your approach to your product. Because, you know, in the past, Call of Duty is like, you know, safe. Everybody says, oh, I don't like Call of Duty this year. And then it's still the, you know, the best-selling game of the year. And while that is true of this year, but I think that EA went into Star Wars Battlefront 2 saying, like, look, it's Star Wars, it's Battlefront, we're gonna do whatever we want, you know, we're gonna introduce these kind of schemey microtransaction systems, and it's gonna be fine because it's Star Wars. And the gaming community as a whole said, not so fast, not anymore. So I think that you're gonna see a lot more developers and publishers being wary of the fact that, like, gamers as a whole can actually enact some change now, because I feel like that's happening with a bunch of different games. It's happening with Destiny right now. You know, the community is turning against Bungie and Activision because of the hubris of thinking, like, well, we could just keep pushing the envelope of microtransactions. And right now, if you go to the Bungie.net forums, you have to go 20 pages deep until you get a post that is not titled "Remove Eververse."
So, right.
Yeah. I feel like that this loot box stuff is really like actually finally like gonna make some changes, and I'm glad to see it.
Yeah. Christian, I'm sure you agree that loot boxes was a major story in 2017.
Yeah, it was huge. I'm curious to see how long the ramifications last. I want to agree with what Anthony's saying, and I hope he's right. But I think oftentimes what you see in instances like this is that someone goes way past the line, and then everybody reacts, and then the next company comes out past the original line that we thought was acceptable, but still not as far as Battlefront 2 went, right? And everybody's like, well, it's not as bad as Battlefront. And like there's this slow acceptance, like standards change over time. What's what you're allowed to say to people, words you're allowed to use, you know, whatever. And other examples outside of gaming, you see how society changes or starts to tolerate something that it used to not tolerate. And I'm curious to see how, as gaming continues in this loot box stuff, and evolution of microtransactions continues, what we end up tolerating, or the flip side of that coin is what does it evolve to? Because I feel like what this is now the cousin or adopted, you know, child or whatever, right? Once removed cousin of Project $10 or, you know, even DLC or horse armor. There's constantly been this way to further monetize a release. And if it's not some version of this, I'm curious what that evolves into next year and whether or not we tolerate it. What do you think?
Well, I'm very curious as to how regulation may enter into all of this, whether it's legal regulation, as we're seeing with some of the international territories kind of looking at this as a way of enticing kids into gambling and kind of stepping into it that way. And even Hawaii here in the United States has state lawmakers who say that they are going to try to put some sort of regulations on this in Hawaii. So I think there's that may start encroaching on developers' ability to do whatever they want in this area. But I think more interesting is this development with Apple and these platform holders that may not want to be associated with this kind of thing, or at least want to limit their liability on yeah. If this all does come to a head.
That's,
you know,
that's the issue, right? It's like, do you want to be associated with it? I don't know. It makes us money. Whoa, there's a liability. Whoa, let's pump the brakes.
Yeah. Well, that's the question, right? Is Steam going to step up to the plate? I think when you get something the size of those things, like an Apple, a Valve, these kinds of places that are required for these developers to make money, are they going to start saying, well, we don't want our – you know, we saw what Valve did with regard to CSGO gambling, and it's sort of tepid response at first and then sort of – you know, doing something a little stronger and making a bigger statement about whether or not they want to be associated with gambling, but still they didn't put their foot down, you know? So I don't think we're going to see this stuff go away, but I happen to like the idea of requiring a disclosure of what your odds are, but I suspect that there'll be lots of loopholes. There'll be ways to just bury that into game menus. Like, yeah, it's in the game. You have to go searching for it, but it's in the game. Yeah. We tell you what the odds are. Or, like, for example, what Blizzard did with Hearthstone in China, because China has strict rules already with regard to this stuff. Blizzard just said, well, we'll sell you a different thing. We won't sell you randomized card packs. We'll sell you Arcane Dust, which is our space bucks. And you buy that and you can craft cards out of it. So you're just buying our currency in game. It's not random. There's no random. Oh, by the way, if you buy enough Arcane Dust, we gift you a free card pack. So we'll give you random cards if you buy enough of this other thing. It's just a free gift we're including along with it. Nobody's buying Arcade Dust just for the card packs. That's ridiculous. So, I mean, there's lots of loopholes around that kind of thing. So I don't think this is over by any means, but it's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out over the course of the next year or so.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Christian, what would you consider to be your story of 2017?
For me, it's Nintendo Switch and the SNES Classic. And, I think I might've said that I didn't expect the Switch to do as well as it's doing. And look at the games that they came out. It launched in March and you got Mario, Zelda, ARMS, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Splatoon 2, arguably, I'm sure it's some gamers' top five games of the year. Like, those are them, right? Incredible quality, incredible new direction on storied franchises with Zelda and Mario, incredible new IPs, and a bold new direction from some of this young talent at Nintendo, flexing their muscle with things like ARMS and Splatoon 2 again, and showing this new direction. Indie games selling like gangbusters on the Switch. Like, it's dominated the conversation since it's come out, and I think we're all kind of cautious about 2018 for Nintendo because we're like, well, they can't keep this up just because we keep expecting Nintendo to Nintendo. But I mean, at this point, I'm ready to eat crow and, put my foot in my mouth and put my foot out of my mouth, whatever the right way of it is.
Hard to eat crow when your foot's in there.
Right, whatever crows and feet do.
At this crow's point, feet? Oh, that's not good. You got to get an ointment for that.
It's because I smile too much. So they're by my eyes. It just means I'm happy. I'm excited for 2018 for the Switch. Like, I don't know what they're going to come out with. I have no idea. But if the last 5 months or whatever of 2017 are any indication, the Switch is going to go down as my favorite console ever. I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. At the fact that a Nintendo console came out in a calendar year already makes it a big story. But I think the Switch even is a bigger story than just that because of, A, how popular a console it is. But also, it really does feel like a new thing. It feels like this revelation of finally this dream that we've all had of a thing that is both a home console and a portable console all at once. I mean, we've been wanting that for a long time, ever since the Game Boy Advance or Game Boy came out, right? It was like, what if I could play the games over here on that, though? And they really have pulled it off, and it feels – the games feel really like console games. They don't feel like mobile games, and yet you can play them on the go. I think that, coupled with how popular it is and how much support it seems to be getting, they seem to be hitting all the right notes with Switch. And I do think, I mean, we were having this conversation just the other day, I think you and I, Christian, the idea of what does the next generation of consoles look like? Like, you can't, as Nintendo now, post-Switch, you can't not have a portable console. You can't go back now.
I wouldn't be surprised if in 2019 they just do cards again. Like, you can't predict Nintendo. As much as I try, I feel like the next console is the Virtual Boy 2, and they're just like, I don't know, and we're just like, what the heck, Nintendo?
I think it's going to be Switch U, and then
no.
Anthony, you on this bandwagon for Switch being one of the most important stories of 2017?
Absolutely. I love my Switch. I think that Switch, yeah, it's what I wanted, like when they introduced the Vita. It's what I wanted when they introduced that. It feels like this, I'm playing a console game on the go, and it has the added bonus of, if I don't want to play it on the go, I can hook it up to my TV and play it. And it's not, I don't feel like I'm getting any lesser of an experience or dramatically lesser of an experience on either one. Taking it on the go, yeah, the Joy-Cons aren't the best compared to the Pro Controller, but the games still look nice. They run fine. And it's the type of thing where every new game that's announced, you want there to be a Switch version, because that would be like, okay, I could, in my busy day, I could get more of this game, played.
Yeah, I think that's the key point, right? Is not only is it a great console, not only does it have amazing first party Nintendo software, those two things were, I think, givens. The thing that is so crazy is it's my preferred console for a lot of these third party games. It's, God, I wish there was a version on the Switch instead of, oh yeah, there's also a version on the Switch. It is, of the three, I oftentimes would give up some visual fidelity to be able to just play it on the go. And that's a huge win for just this concept. I don't know if the one thing I would take away from the Switch, though, is I don't know if their complete vision for the console being this crazy, the Switch concept, which is, it's not just Switch between two things, it's Switch between like 14 different things. Their idea of it being this weird chameleon that lets you play it in a variety of different, formats and setups. I don't think that has really taken hold and proven to be interesting enough.
No.
But that kind of doesn't even matter because the two versions, the console big TV version and the on the go version, work so well.
Yeah, I feel like that was kind of their main vision, right, for it. But then I also think that I love the Switch. I love almost every Nintendo game, but sometimes I do feel like their successes are happy accidents, which is maybe me just being ignorant. But like, I feel like when they came with the Switch, like, oh, you got this great idea. You can take it with you and play it on the screen. And then they were just like, oh, crap. We got to throw everything else in there. I remember like the reveal trailer or whatever, and they spent like 20 minutes on the controller. They're like, it has four buttons. It has dual analogs. And they were like, and you can dock it and you can play it in handheld. If you want, you can throw it at somebody. Look, it's a football. If you don't want to do that, put your drink on it. It's a coaster. You can do anything. Right. And it felt like, obviously those are dumb examples, but they were like, in motion control and this and sideways and this, and you can do this and you can play it on. And they're just kind of like, buy it, please. And we did, but not for those reasons. We bought it for the simple reason of Zelda in my hand, Zelda on my TV, Zelda on the toilet, Zelda on the train, right?
And well, that brings up the big question. And of course, next week's episode will be our look forward into 2018. But I think it's worth bringing up now this idea of what can – the Switch had such a titanic 2017, maybe the biggest first year of a console
ever.
Wait,
that's not a good thing, right? A titanic? It might have a Titanic 2018.
I mean, you know, Titanic, we're talking about the movie, you know, second highest grossing movie of all time.
There you go.
Okay, boom. Great. Good.
Titanic.
Yeah,
Jim Cameron's had like Titanic of a year.
It had like an Avatar 2017.
Perfect. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. It had like a Hindenburg 2017. It was like the greatest, biggest Zeppelin of all time. No, but how do they follow that up in 2018? What bullets can they have left in the chamber? They've fired them all. I mean, we know that there's a Metroid in the works, but I would be shocked if it comes out next year.
Smash? So, Mario Smash. Maker?
Yeah.
Maybe
I feel like those are ports, right? Those are ports.
I feel like they just let people, you know, that couldn't get it this year, get it next year and play those games and just kind of float.
That's not a bad plan.
If they float through next year. Like, They front loaded so heavily that you can't blame them. You know, I mean, Mike, you know, I don't want to be that guy, but like Microsoft launched a new console, or quote unquote new console, this year without anything really to be a selling point. So, you know, the fact that they front loaded it and got the console out and it did well, I think they deserve at least 1 year of, if they don't put out anything major, nobody freaking out.
I think you're right, Christian. I think we're going to see a Smash Brothers, but I do think it'll be mostly the Smash Brothers for Wii U. And, you know, and I guess that's fine.
But it's you can't expect any studio to create the amount of hits that we're expecting from Nintendo, right? It's a danged if they do, danged if they don't. Or it's like
three.
No. Well, this year I listed five and it came out in March.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. And two of them were maybe Splatoon 2 with kind of a port or whatever, but like that's still pretty dang incredible, especially when you consider the size of those games and the quality and the polish in them. But like the complaint years past have always been, the net never launches with good software. There's never anything good within the first few months. And then we get that. And now we're like, yeah, but the next 24 months are going to suck. It's like, come on.
Right.
Come
well,
on.
That's not what I said, but yes, no, I understand.
I'm being the broader internet, not you. You said, I hate the Switch. Zelda's the worst game of the year. I hate Nintendo. Here's my Microsoft tattoo.
I think we all – I was so pleasantly surprised by the Switch, and it exceeded all expectations, really. It really is – it's a delight to play on. It is the console. Like, if any indie game comes out, I'm like, I just want it to be on Switch now.
Yeah.
It's – yeah.
What's yours?
And it's great that we are getting those indie games on it. It's amazing.
Yeah. What's your story? What's the big thing that's captivated you other than Heroes of the Storm is still a game?
That's my story, is that Heroes of the Storm. No, it's not. Of course, loot boxes in the Switch are certainly worthy contenders. I'm going to go with Battle Royale as a mode because I feel like it's not every year that you get a new genre introduced into gaming. I mean, it's I guess Dark Souls was the last new sort of genre defining game that we had. Or maybe you could even say Rocket League last year kind of could fit that bill. But my goodness, Battle Royale, PUBG or H1Z1, whichever game you credit as being the true genesis of this mode, it certainly is clear that PUBG popularized it beyond anybody's expectations and has sold wildly. And now
I bought it twice.
You bought it twice. Yeah. Now we're seeing battle royale modes in everything. I mean, we got Fortnite with a battle royale mode. I guess Counter-Strike now has a battle royale mode.
It's coming. If it's not, it's soon, you know.
That is wild. And I think despite the protestations of Brendan Green himself, player unknown himself, this is something that's going to be, I think, a standard in first-person, third-person shooters now. I think you will have deathmatch, you will have capture the flag, you will have, you know, and you will have battle royale modes. I think that is just going to be just incorporated into what we expect from these kinds of games. And I say, awesome. I'm glad that it doesn't need to be its own game. It can be a part of these larger, bigger games that have established mechanics that work well.
The problem, though, and Anthony, I'm curious on your take. I think the problem is player base to support it. When it's a mode within a bunch of other modes, it's kind of the reason why Splatoon, Salmon Run is kind of like cordoned off, because whatever, I don't know if they ever gave an official reason, but it always seemed like we want people, enough people to be playing this, and like you can't even pick your map, and it's changed and evolved over time. But I feel like maybe you'll have battle royale, but this 100 person, you know, the epic scope and feel of Fortnite or PUBG, if you're Call of Duty and you also have capture the flag, team deathmatch, attrition or whatever, and then also battle royale, like, Anthony, do you think this is sustainable, or is that what blows up the genre, is everybody doing it so there's no people to play it?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, yeah, it's what's going to really, I think, not kill it, but really lessen people's interest and turn into this thing of, you know, people in Twitch chat saying like, LOL, you know, lol, battle royale game in 2018 is, you're going to have, what if there's a Division sequel? I can all but guarantee that they're looking into making a battle royale game, because they had the framework with Survival, and there'll be a lot more. You know, I'm sure, you know, Rockstar, if they're not doing it, they're at least trying to figure out how to make it go into Grand Theft Auto or Red Dead. So I do feel like, yeah, there is going to be an oversaturation, but it's still like such a massive thing. Like, it dominates Twitch. It, you know, it dominates sales. I think, you know, it's not my cup of tea, but I totally understand why people like it. And I think that there weren't enough copycats this year, to be honest. You know, I feel like there's still so much room for more copycats, because really, like, there was PUBG that, you know, had the whole big following, and then Fortnite came out and Fortnite kind of siphoned off some of that. And then that was really it. You know, I feel like there's more opportunities to like go after that and improve on that. I feel like the people that like Fortnite are the people that have problems with PUBG. And so I think there are going to be people that have problems with Fortnite who will find the next game.
Yeah, I think you're going to see 2018 and beyond, we're just going to get a glut of these things. And maybe there'll be a oversaturation point that will not be super good for that genre, but it'll reach an equilibrium. And the thing that's exciting, the reason I think it is a defining story of this year, is it's here to stay, right? This is a mechanic. This is a rule set for these games that is easy to implement and super fun, and I think is going to be around in some form for a long, long time. And 2017 was the year it became a thing.
Look how fast Fortnite was just able to like take this game that was a horde mode and just go like, oh, let's take some pieces and move them around and do some things. Boom, we got a battle royale. Like, I can't imagine that they were considering a battle royale mode prior to, you know, like at least midway through this year. And now,
yeah,
like I played Fortnite, like real Fortnite.
And so did I
talk about people with Fortnite, they're always like, oh yeah, you know, like, how far have you gone? Like, how many wins? It's like, no, I was defending the storm shelter from the zombies. And they're like, there's zombies in the game? What?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a game that came out this year. I think, I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Our chat, by the way, is suggesting a whole bunch of battle royale games. Eric on Caffeine said Cuphead battle royale, make it happen. AQ Trans said Tetris battle royale.
They've kind of done that, but not with like, I think it was 4v4 was the most. It was like Tetris Worlds, right? I think.
Gaucho Cam says Hearthstone battle royale.
There are a lot of different, there are so many different ways you could go with it. And I am surprised that there wasn't more. And I'm sure there will be. I'm sure E3 is going to be groan after groan of people taking the stage at every press conference and going, welcome to our new game. It's called this. It's a battle royale game, 120 players. And everybody goes, ugh.
We took PUBG and we added 6 more players. Welcome to...
I guess if you can count on one thing from the video game industry, it's that they will milk something until it dies. I mean, we saw about 1 billion D Dark Souls-esque games. So, you know, it's but that's fine. It's fine. The best stuff will rise to the top.
Unless it's the Nemesis system, then apparently no one else can do it, which still blows my mind.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. That's interesting. All right, well, let's get to the meat of the show and our lists, our best of lists. But first, I want to thank our sponsors, Squarespace. Squarespace has been a longtime sponsor, and I'm just so pleased about that because I've been using Squarespace for a long time myself. JeffCanada.com is housed on Squarespace, was built on Squarespace. I love using Squarespace. I recommend it to all my friends and family, and it's because it's the easiest way to make a website. If you have any reason whatsoever to have an online presence or make a website, you got to check out Squarespace because nothing is easier or looks better or slicker to use. Like you can just make something so quickly and so simply. And the thing that you make will actually look professional and awesome. You start with a template that they have that has been professionally made, and then you just start messing with it. You can drag and drop and just create as you would like. You can do all that, by the way, without even giving them a credit card. You can just get to their site and start building your website. If you need to sell stuff, they have easy drag and drop, marketplace kind of implementation, so you can add a storefront and charge people, or you can add all kinds of cool stuff. It automatically scales to any mobile device. You don't have to worry about any of that. They have built-in SEO, search engine optimization, 24/7 award-winning customer support. You don't ever have to upgrade or patch anything. That's all handled for you. It's great. It's great. I really, really like it. And everybody at some point is going to need to build a website. Why not go with the best place that makes it easy on you? If you can dream it, you can make it with Squarespace. And even better, we're going to help you out. We're going to give you once you decide to purchase, because you don't even have to give them your credit card to build the site and make it your own. Once you decide to purchase, if you put in our promo code, which is Jeff Sent Me, JeffSentme, all one word, we'll give you 10% off your purchase, and that will help them know that it was a good idea to sponsor us, which is great too. 10% off, you go to squarespace.com. You get your free trial. Try it out for free. Don't even worry about paying. But when you're ready to launch, when you're ready to launch your site and give it to the public and have it be your online destination, use that promo code Jeff Sent Me. Get yourself 10% off.
DLC's personal favorite games of the
year, based on an incomplete sampling.
Yeah, it's time, guys. 2017's favorite games of the year. We're going to count down our top fives. Let's get right into it with number 5. Anthony, why not kick us off? What's your number 5 game of 2017?
My number 5 game of 2017 is What Remains of Edith Finch.
Ah, yes.
Love that game. It affected me in a way I don't think any other game on my list did. Mm-hmm. It is one of those, like, you know, quote unquote walking simulator games with just a really great design aesthetic. There's so much variety in what you're doing. I don't know. I was just captivated. I played it in one sitting and, you know, wanted to finish it.
Yeah.
Some might describe it as a 4-hour game that you can't fail, but the experiences and the game mechanics that it brings to you are whatever else the rest of that goes. Do you want to talk about it now, Jeff, or later?
We can talk about it now.
I don't know what your list is, but I have a feeling we might be talking about it later also.
It's a pretty good feeling. I will definitely be talking about it soon, but I obviously concur. I think it's an amazing experience. It's truly a piece of art expressed through interactive entertainment, and nothing like it. I mean, I think some people present may be Grinches and not understand it or get it or not have a cold, dark heart and didn't feel anything because of it.
Anthony's taking time off his Friday night to be with us, Jeff. Let's not.
Anthony put it on his list, Christian.
I put it on my list.
Yeah, no, yeah. But it, I mean, I think a lot of people perhaps discount it because A, it is short, B, you can't fail it, and I mean, there's literally no fail state in the game, and you literally can play it with one button. So a lot of those things, I think some people count as negative. Not me, because the experience is so profound. It really got me emotionally in a way most games don't. And it's a thing of beauty. It's truly a thing of beauty that makes me think about humanity like great art does. But yeah, Christian, you didn't like it.
It didn't connect with me in the same way that it did with you guys. That's correct. It might have been that I think it was like the third of that genre I played in a row, but I'm glad that it's resonating with so many people. And I mean, I think I've had fun just hearing you talk about it over the course of the year, Jeff, like how it stuck with you. And I think anytime a game does that, it's hard for it not to be considered as a favorite of the year. And I think the more we talk about non-AAA games, the better it is for the industry. Not that those games can't be our favorites. I'm going to name quite a few of them, but I love when these smaller games, you know, really affect people, because I think that's what I love about the hobby so much, is what it's able to do.
So Christian, what is your number five?
My number five, we might talk about it later too. My number five is Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Now, I think many people would be shocked to have it be so low as to be fifth on your list. Anything to say to those people?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of great games came out this year, and I think five is a wonderful spot, especially considering all the games that came out this year. For me, what kept it from being higher is the type of gamer that I am. I need a little more direction. I need whether it's narrative or waypoints on my map, a la Wildlands or pick your Ubisoft game, something to like tell me I'm doing a good job, you know, like giving me that pat on the back, that social conditioning I have from social media or whatever. I don't know, like, hey, someone liked your thing, me being like, yay, or hey, you achieved something, me being like, yay. Zelda was a little too open for me. But that said, the exploration, when it did click, or I did have, and maybe it's just my schedule, but when I did have time to sit down and really melt away in it, like I loved it the most when I was on my couch or on a plane and just like me in the game, and I could just melt away into this world and solve puzzles I didn't even know were puzzles when I approached them. And then seeing people online with like, I did something one way, then I watch a GIF and it's like, do you know that you can just, if you tap your Switch four times and then click the right stick, and that's a dumb example, right? But like things like that, like the creativity afforded in the game. And then for me, what bumped it up onto five and not keeping it, it'd be in my top 10 just with me, but really pushed it up a few spots, was seeing my daughter connect with it. I have a 5-year-old, she's five now. And just having her, the wonder and joy that I could see in her eyes as she just roamed through the forest, and how nervous and excited she got when she came upon just the smallest enemy and, you know, kind of like recoiled. I was like, ah, and like then tried to fight them or would hand it to me, or watching her for 20 minutes just cook stuff, and the joy, the simple things that Nintendo does of like, and like seeing a game connect with her like that for the first time was truly magical. So it was like a really awesome experience for us to have together. And it's hard for me to separate that out and not have that influence where I put the game and having it climb up to number five.
Yeah, clearly a titanic release. I'll use that term again. Clearly a big, big release that's going to have ripple effects, I think, throughout the industry for many years to come. I think you're going to see games that are influenced by Breath of the Wild. It is one of those seminal moments in the industry, and therefore I think worthy of all the praise that it's getting. But I'm sort of a little bit in your camp, Christian, in the sense that I feel like the way I hear people talk about Breath of the Wild makes me wish I had had that experience that they talk about. I think people express that to me a lot when they hear me effuse about certain things. They're like, oh, I wish I felt that way about the thing that you used.
It's Edith Finch for me. I mean, I played that whole, it was different because but I played, and I hear you talk about it and I'm just like, I just missed all that. Like that didn't connect with me in that way. And I kind of think that's cool that, you know, we can have these vastly different experiences with the same product and it doesn't connect with someone in the same way. You don't dive into it. Right. And I kind of think that's magical.
Yeah, that game and Persona 5 were the games that I'm like, I wish I felt about them the way people who recommended them to me felt about them.
But, I wish Persona 5 was on the Switch.
Yeah, that really says a lot too, yeah. Anthony, I suspect you'll be talking about this one a little later?
Maybe.
All right, so we can move on. My number 5 game is... This is hard for me. This is very hard for me to pick this one because there was a lot of vying for this spot, but it's Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
Nice.
And I adore this game. It is, I think, unfortunately overlooked because of the other big Mario that was released on Switch this year, but unlikely that this game – I didn't think it was likely this game would be as good as it turned out to be, being not really a Nintendo joint. It was really an Ubisoft joint, and it's phenomenal. It captures what I love about turn-based tactical games like XCOM, but makes it somehow both more accessible and still challenging and still ramps up its challenges in really wonderful ways. The look and feel is beautiful and cartoony and delightful, and there's secrets to be found throughout the overmap, just sort of traversal stuff. I love the fights. I love the power. The way you feel like the power escalates and you always feel like you're OP, but then the fights are also always really interesting and challenging. I adore Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
Yeah, it's great. And I love that it is a Ubisoft joint. And I think, too, this kind of goes back to the year of Nintendo, that it stinks that this leaked out, because I do think that could have been a megaton type announcement at E3. And it was so cool to see the Ubisoft devs get so emotional and to see Nintendo back it in a big way and kind of give them freedom to do whatever they wanted with their characters. And granted, we've had like Mario versus Sonic in the Olympics and Mario and other things, but have this game come out and be so polished and kind of do a new take on these characters that we know so well is really cool, especially considering we've seen Mario do everything, right? Yeah. From golf to tennis to whatever. And this is still like, it was a really fresh use of the character in the IP, and I think it clicked for a lot of people. Did you play it, Anthony? I forget.
I did. I played it the whole way through. It's on my top 10. It didn't make 5, but my only real criticisms of it are the escort missions are awful. And
I don't think so. I thought the escort missions were fine. I thought they were fine. I mean, I didn't prefer them, but I liked the fact that there were different kinds of missions. So
yeah, no, I do appreciate that. Every time it was like I could see we were going to go get somebody, and then it was like, oh, I'm gonna have to bring him back, and one of those dudes with the tombstone on his back is gonna pop out right next to him. There's nothing I can do.
But it's not. I think because they made the movement through the map so much different than XCOM, like the fact that you could get so far on a single move, I think mitigated that those missions in particular, the frustration that I usually find with them a lot. So I don't know.
Yeah, that for me, I was disappointed in that, and I think it gets a little long in the tooth towards the end. But I had a ton of fun with it. If you have not played it, I'm going to give you a hot tip. Luigi, always Luigi.
All Luigi all the time.
And invest in his like double like reaction shot, and you'll love the game even more.
Oh man. Yeah. I loved opening up new characters. I could go on and on, but yeah, that is my number 5 game. So number 4, Mr. Tarmina.
Yes.
What is your
Cuphead?
Oh, Cuphead. Wow.
Cuphead is my number 4.
Did you beat it?
I 100% beat it.
Oh,
there's a stream of me beating it, so I have the proof.
Did you break any controllers?
No, but I did get frustrated at places. I just I feel like the boss battles are so creative. The animation, the music, the controls. I just really, really, really adore that game. I think it's just something so unique, and it's so striking visually. And I'm a sucker for boss battles that are, you know, like when a boss appears in a game and you're just doing the same thing that you had been doing before, it kind of disappoint me. So what I liked about this was every boss had a different pattern, had a different, you know, routine that I had to memorize and learn from. And there's just like so many great moments of like, you die and then you see your progress and you're like, I was right there. Or you barely made a dent, or you only have one life left and you take, or one little bit of health left and you like think you beat the boss and then it triggers a new phase and you're like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What is this? What is this?
You die. That's the answer. You die.
I really enjoyed that game from top to bottom.
I'm so pleased that you said that, because I still haven't really played it. Christian, I don't think you have really played it either, have you?
Not outside of E3. I think I watched some of your stream, Anthony. I watched some Spawn on Me streams, and I'm like, this game looks beautiful. Okay, I'm good. I love that it came out, and I love that it connected with so many people, and I love what it became from what they first showed it, because it was kind of a game where they showed the trailer first, everybody was blown away, then it kind of, that first
like 7 years ago when they showed the trailer?
It wasn't that long. No, it's been a while. First hands-on, people were skeptical. They're like, I don't know, and then I think it really blew people
the
away.
The run and gun, the stuff that they added, like, you know, to not make it just a boss rush game, I think is the worst part of the game.
Interesting. Like,
I wish it would have just been what they initially intended, because the bosses are the best part of the game. The run and gun is, I think, the worst part of the game, personally.
Well, that's Cuphead, and that is Anthony's number four. My number four is What Remains of Edith Finch, which we've already talked about, but I just will reiterate what a beautiful, magical, wonderful experience that was. And it's something that I have thought about so much since I've played it. And that is the sign, I think, of a wonderful experience in any medium.
Yeah. Christian. Well, hold on, Jeff. Let me ask you. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. What was your – which vignette stuck with you the most?
Oh, man. Well, I think the easy answer is the fish heads one.
Yeah.
But I also loved the swing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That just made my – it just made my heart sing. It is – Yeah. What about you? Did you have another one?
The daughter with the like horror night.
Yeah. The comic book one.
Yeah.
So good. There's it's amazing. It's an amazing series of ideas expressed in that game. Okay, Christian, what is your number four?
We might talk about it again later, and it's been this thing where it's weird where I've kind of had to separate what's happened recently for the joy and love I had for it when it came out, but it is Destiny 2. When that game came out, I really enjoyed the campaign. I thought the cinematics were incredible. I liked the plot. I think the game has its problems, but few shooters feel as good as Bungie can make a shooter, and you know, I was hooked on that thing, and I get that I'm not the hardcore extreme player. Like, I was okay hitting level 300 and walking away from the game until DLC came out that might pull me back in. I understand that some people wanted it to be their everyday, their hobby. But for me, and the way I play games, the amount of hours I put into that game and the pure joy I had, you know, playing it, doing things that I never did in the first Destiny. Like, Anthony carried me through a raid. I attempted a raid a couple of other times. I played the hard version of the Strikes. I played Strikes. I played Crucible. I played a lot of Crucible. I played it again on PC when it came out. I was given a code on PC, so I didn't rebuy it. But I, you know, played a decent amount again on PC. And just the experience of the core game, I thought, was just a real triumph for me and what I was looking for in that game. The stuff they've done since, like this holiday event that they have going on now, seems like it's just a real mess and microtransactions and kind of how they've reacted to their hardcore player base. I'll admit has maybe soured me even on my initial impressions. Maybe it might have been higher had we done this episode, you know, like right after I hit level 300 or whatever. But my time with that game when it was good was so, so good. And I love the shooting mechanics that Bungie is able to polish so well.
One of my biggest question marks coming into this episode was whether this game ended up making Taormina's top five. So I kind of don't even want to know if it's going to show up later or not. if the latest controversies and frustrations that he's expressed.
Let's keep chugging along then.
Yeah. So I don't know. Okay. But I feel bad if it's not on his list, if he's going to not have a chance to talk about it.
It's not on my list.
It's not on your list.
It's not on my list. Wow. It's not even in my top 10.
Wow.
And was that always the case, or has that just happened in the last like month?
I think the platform that Bungie has put together is an improvement over Destiny 1 in terms of a lot of the systems and what they've introduced. But I feel as though Destiny 2 ultimately is a step backwards compared to all of the improvements that happened in year 3 with Rise of Iron. Like 100%, I think that there were two teams. There was one, you know, the live team, and there was the Taken King team, we'll call them, with Luke Smith. And they must have been working independent of each other, or they started work and then, you know, the live team introduced changes that were well received, and they were like, well, we're not going to have time to put those in. But Destiny for me at the end of the day is a game that I like to get on every day and play with my friends. And the fun I have playing with my friends now in the end game of Destiny 2 is not anywhere close to the fun I had in the end game of Destiny 1. Wow. And also this dawning event is awful.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Wow, yeah. I am surprised. I wasn't sure it was going to make your top 5, but I thought for sure at least top 10. But my goodness,
nope. Oh, I just,
how the mighty have fallen, Tower Man.
It's well, this DLC also, like, I guess it has everything to do with, you know, like the fool me once type of mentality. Like the Curse of Osiris DLC is just as short as like the Dark Below DLC, which was the first DLC for Destiny 1, and they both have similar criticisms, but you've had 3 years to learn from that experience, and you're just doing it again. I will say the raid lair in Curse of Osiris is really good. The boss fight at the end is especially good, but yeah, it's repeating a lot of the same problems again.
You know what I'm going to have to do now, Anthony, is come up with a new DLC moniker for you, because it does not apply anymore.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, like, you know, between me and Christian, we're different players. I have probably quadrupled the number of hours in Destiny
probably that
Christian does.
I think the more hardcore, the more serious you are with it, the worse the game becomes. Like, I really do.
The more you love it, the less you love it.
Well, the more you want to keep, like, I'm okay playing a 10-hour game and being like, done with that game. But sure. I understand. We talked about this, I think, a few episodes when Anthony was on. Like, Destiny isn't presented as that, right? And they talked about it on their podcast. So they were trying to appease, you know, the single player people that just want to play a campaign, the middle ground people, where I think is where I land, and then also the hardcore. And maybe it goes back to that triangle that we have talked about, Jeff, of like cheap, faster, quality, and you can get two, but you can't get all three. And it seems like Destiny whiffed big on their most faithful.
I mean, even at its lowest lows, I think for Destiny 1, the best indication is the Twitch, you know, community, the people watching, the people streaming. And even at its lowest lows, Destiny 1 still had a lot of dedicated fans. And now a lot of those people that were like the champ, they were the true Destiny's last champions, getting on every day to stream, you know, Destiny grind. They are playing Fortnite every morning now.
Wow. Wow. Sounds like a problem. I wonder if they'll be able to right that ship and pull those players back in. It'll be interesting to see how 2018, you know, works out for that. All right. So we're on number three. I'll start with number three. And I think my top three, it almost feels like could have gone in any order. I mean, these are all so – they all vied for the number one spot. I'm happy with the order I came to, but they're all so, so great and so close to my heart. But my number three game is Divinity Original Sin 2, which is, I mean, I loved Divinity Original Sin. I think that year that Divinity came out, it was my number one. And I think Divinity Original Sin 2 actually improves on the first game in almost every way. I don't think there's a system in the game that doesn't perform better in this one. And chief among those improvements in Divinity Original Sin 2 is complete voice acting throughout the entire game. And it makes such a huge difference. It's such high quality, excellent voice acting. It's almost mind-boggling how good this is, because anybody that's played a Bethesda game or any big sprawling role-playing game, invariably there is a couple of quests where you feel like the VO actors are tired, or they had to do a quick pickup or something, and it just doesn't sound like it's really happening right then. Never is that the case with Divinity. Anyway, that is a great part of it, but also the systems are great. I love that it's a throwback to my favorite game of all time, which is Ultima 7. It feels like the spiritual successor to those kinds of isometric games. The combat system is thrilling and amazing. Graphically, it looks better than the first game. There's so much more to do. It's a gigantic game. The starting heroes are fascinating and so well written. It is one of the best role-playing games ever, and thus also one of the best role-playing games of the year. So I'm very happy to talk more and more about Divinity Original Sin 2, which everyone should play.
Twitch chat is asking, is that on PS4, just Xbox, just PC?
On PC right now, but the first Divinity came to consoles, so I suspect they'll probably do that as well, especially since it has full controller support on PC, and it does so in a way where you like switch over completely. Like you can't – most games where you can pick up a controller and use that and it'll go, oh, you're using a controller now. Okay, cool. With Divinity, and it's actually one of my pet peeves, with Divinity, you have to select it from the main menu and you're stuck. You can't push keyboard commands once you've got a controller. And I suspect that's because that's how they're going to implement the console. But I don't think it's actually come out for console yet. I could be wrong, but I don't think it has. I played it on PC.
Cool.
Your number three, Christian.
It's same thing. This could be anywhere. Mario Odyssey. What a triumph of a game. I'm smiling the whole time I'm playing it. Again, just the inventiveness. And I think too, you know, you and I both came off of E3 a little nonplussed with it. We're like, how it was shown, and like, no, there's something everywhere, but why don't you go look over there? And I'm like, I don't want to. But now, and I was like, let me play. And I think we kind of both left E3 thinking, yeah, I don't know about this game. But when I got to play it on the plane, on the couch, on the toilet, on the TV, just magical. It captured everything I love about 3D Mario and then kept reinventing itself. It almost felt like every level or every world, whatever they're called, in Mario Odyssey, almost every level was like what other games were, in terms of like other games, like, here's a new mechanic, we're going to build this game around it. And Odyssey was like, here's this new mechanic, you'll do it 5 times and that was fun, right? Here's another new mechanic. And don't worry, if you like that other mechanic, we'll give you a reason to go back and do more of that mechanic later. But also, check out this song. Isn't this song bizarre?
Yeah.
It just kept surprising me every turn. And I haven't spent enough time with the end game. Maybe that'd make it even higher. I don't know. But just, I mean, it's a game that keeps giving, and it looks so good, and it plays so well. I think the inclusion of the motion controls, that's like its only fault, is that I wish I didn't have to do any of that or whatever. I could get by, do all the moves without anything. But if that's my only little grievance, is like, I don't want to shake the controller. That's a dang good game. It's a dang good game.
It is dang good. It is an amazing, joyful, positive, lovely experience that I think is going to stand the test of time and go down as one of the great Mario games ever. It is. It's an amazing thing that Nintendo has done this year with both Mario and Zelda. So, yeah. Anthony, your number three.
My number three is Nier Automata.
Yay.
It's just, I think, really unexpected surprise for me. I didn't really think that this was my type of game. But I heard a lot of people, say the two things: you must play this game and you must see the multiple endings.
I only did the first one.
Yeah, I did all of them. All the ones that are like the main endings, because there is more to the game if you get all of the endings. You get to play different stuff. I think the combat is good. I think that it has like a very kind of, initial goofy look to it. You have, these weird robots that are saying odd things, but there's deeper themes to explore. It's really just an unexpected sort of treasure. I don't know. There's no other way to put it. Like, I really, really, really enjoyed the game as far as like the way the whole thing comes together story-wise and builds on those multiple endings and the characters I really learned to care about. And I really like the game. It's great.
Yeah. That's another one that fits in that category of, I wish it grabbed me like it grabbed other people. I really loved the opening sequence before it goes open world. And once it went open world, it just felt sparse and uninspired to do much. I don't know. I just didn't, it didn't get its tendrils in me the way it did to other people.
I think it'd make my top 10. Spoiler, it is not in my top 5, but what a phenomenal game. And I think coming from Platinum too, that everybody had all, or in part from Platinum, right? Everybody had loved a lot of what they had done, but we were seeing some mediocre licensed games from them. And then to have this come out coupled with the aesthetic and the story and everything else that it has. And I don't think it's Platinum's best combat ever, but it's really fun and refreshing, and especially adding it to that genre of game, I thought was really cool. And I understand your comment that kind of felt barren and sparse, but I thought it felt clean in a really cool way that a lot of JRPGs, or not even JRPGs, but you know, Japanese inspired games don't sometimes. And I think it kind of took this aesthetic of like this futuristic 2001 space odyssey, what does a spaceship look like kind of thing, and extrapolated that out. And then you saw that even in Ruins, it was like very clean lines and modern takes on this stuff. Impressive.
My favorite thing about it is that it seems like they went, what genre should this be? Oh, all of them? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just see if we can do all the genres in one game.
There are some really, you know, like when you the further you dig into the game, like I don't know if Christian saw it. I Jeff, you definitely didn't, because you have to get like 3 or 4 endings deep, but the game changes in some ways, and you're like, wow, it's continuing to do different things. And yeah, I can't say enough about the game. It is well worth trying. If it's a character action game, so at the end of the day, like, I think the combat is pretty solid. Even if you're not into the story, you could just play it for that. But if you give it a chance, it could win you over.
I wonder, you know, I feel like in 2017, more than any other year, I was just drowning in amazing things to play. And I wonder if there had been a window where I could just have that be my main game if I would have fallen deeper in love with it. And I feel that way about Persona, you know, and I feel that way about Zelda. Like, the fact that these games were coming back to back to back to back, all these incredible, big, long experiences, that if they didn't grab me right up front, and if it was like, oh, you got to watch season one of Buffy before it gets good, I felt like there was a lot of season one of Buffy in there, you know, out in the world. Whereas there are so many games where, like, in the first 10 seconds, I'm like, oh, this is my jam. And those were the games that I tended to stick with. And I think that speaks more about me than anything else. It's my lack of patience, you know, the cult of the new sort of shiny new thing over there. And I kind of feel embarrassed about that, but it is the case.
Sure. That's a fair criticism of it, for sure. That you get a lot of people saying like, oh, it's pretty good, and then you get ending Z and you're like, oh, and it is a daunting thing. I will say that, like Christian was saying, it is clean, and it's also clean in the sense of it's not like heavy JRPG like side quests galore. You can do them if you want the first time around, but you can streamline through to the next set of endings pretty quickly. It is not as involved a game to get those multiple endings as you might think.
Interesting. All right. So that was number 3, right?
Yes.
All right. We're on to number 2. Christian, you want to start us off with number 2?
Oh my goodness. It's so hard. We'll talk about this game later, I think, or maybe we talk about it right now just for everybody. Horizon Zero Dawn is my number 2 game of the year.
Also my number 2.
Great. I have to, I'm embarrassed to admit that is my number 2 game of the year, and maybe one of, you know, top 20, top 15 games of all time. I loved it, which just speaks to what 2017 is. I have owned the DLC since it came out, and I haven't started it yet, which I also think speaks to how good of a year 2017 was all the way to the end.
Yeah.
But Aloy is such a great character. The world they build, the combat, the story. I mean, I think you said it when we talked about it originally, Jeff. It's so well paced and it just keeps pulling you along. And when you get comfortable with one thing, you know, like her backstory and you're learning about the world, and then it drops something else, whether it be infighting between tribes or, you know, whatever. And then like the little side, you know, futuristic-y rooms you go into for like bonus XP or weapon unlocks and stuff like that, how that changes the game and the feel of it. And just moment to moment to moment, I was blown away by the game, and the voice acting is so great. And when the story got going, there were nights where, you know, 2-3 in the morning, and I know I have to get up at 6 with my daughters, and I'm just playing for one more mission. How does this resolve? And just what a triumph. What a triumph.
I agree 100%. Also my number two. It could easily have been my number one. It is, I think, an amazing game, an amazing game world. I love it from a purely aesthetic sense. The idea of this fiction, the idea that they can somehow be a science fiction game and like a fantasy tribal game at the same time is amazing. The look and feel of the enemies, those mechanical beasts, were so rad. And the fact that these humans have built societies out of the wreckage of that, and their clothes have, like, you know, the way that real tribal peoples would have, you know, pelts and skulls and stuff from the beasts that they've vanquished, so too do these guys have them, but they're metal. It's just so inventive and cool and different than anything I've seen before. And
while also being the purest distillation of things we've seen before.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. It is a game that doesn't really do anything new, but it does stuff that everybody else has done at least as good and maybe better than most other guys have done it. And it does all of those things the best it could do. It synthesizes the best stuff from a lot of familiar tropes, but it brings them together. It synthesizes them in a way that works extremely well. It is a wonderful experience. So Horizon Zero Dawn, number two for both of us. What is your number two, Anthony?
My number two is Resident Evil 7.
Nice.
Yay.
Yeah.
Did you play in VR?
No, I just played it. I dabbled in the VR, but I played it through just, you know, controller.
January game too, so it stuck with you.
Correct. And I just played through the latest DLC not that long ago. I love everything that they did with this game. I like the change to first person. It has like a first hour that I think is like disturbing and freaky. And it just like they create this perfect little haunted house environment where you see different areas that you're not going to go to yet. And I was just thoroughly creeped out and enjoyed every second of it. I really, really enjoyed the kind of way that they took a step back and said, like, okay, well, we know everybody likes Chris and they like Jill and they like the, you know, the third person camera of Resident Evil 4, and let's just throw that all away. New characters, you know, new combat scheme with some similar stuff, and let's make it a little more focused, a lot more like Resident Evil 1, where you're in this self-contained area for the most part. And I just, yeah, I had so much fun playing it. It was really just like it was like going into a 10-hour haunted house.
Yeah, I was going to say that I loved the game too, but I would never describe it as being fun.
It was fun in parts, I think.
I
like getting scared. I don't know. I'm into that. I liked the idea of like you go down a hallway and a shadow moves and it's like, I want to know what that shadow was. Show me what it was. There's just like so many, the family, the Baker family has, you know, so many creepy dynamics going on that you're just like, I wonder what her deal is. And I wonder what his deal is. And I loved it.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience, especially in VR. I mean, I played it exclusively in VR. I still haven't finished it because I'm too scaredy pants.
That's me. Sure. I feel like I needed to play it in VR, and I can't. I sit down and be like, oh, I can't. I'm not. It's midnight. What am I doing? I'm an idiot. I can't. Ooh, don't do this.
Yeah, it is. But it looks amazing. And there are set pieces that are just as cinematic as could be. And I love, too, how bold a direction. I mean, we give Nintendo all this credit for taking both Mario and Zelda in bold new directions. But Capcom deserves just as much credit for really reinventing what a Resident Evil game is all about. I mean, the difference between 6 and 7 is stark, to say the least.
Sure, yeah.
It's very, a franchise cool. That's like a zombie. It keeps getting back up, and like it might, you know, be long in the tooth at some point, but if you look back from 1 to Code Veronica to 4 to 6 to 7, like it's one of the most well-known franchises at Capcom, but also the one they've taken some huge risks with over the years. And I feel like every time they take a big risk, it pays off in spades. And it's really, really cool to see.
Yeah.
Well, sure. Folks, we have arrived. We have arrived at number one, the game, our individual favorite game of the year. And it bears repeating here at the end of our journey to number one, that these are our favorites based on an incomplete sampling. Although I suspect Taormina's sampling is a little more complete than even
I went through about. And I pretty much played every major release of the year.
There you go. GameRant.com. You can see his reviews right there.
True.
So, Anthony, as our guest,
yes.
You get to go first. What is your favorite game of 2017?
So I should preface this by saying, like, this game was probably going to be my game of the year. No matter what, you know, it was built to be my game of the year. It's my favorite franchise. It's The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yay.
This is why we invite you, so that people don't yell at us.
We're talking, I know I have a lot of hours in Destiny 2, but I have like 200 plus hours in Zelda. I did everything, literally everything you could do in the game. I loved being in that world. I would set aside a few hours and say, like, okay, today I'm gonna go tackle the divine beast in the Zora region. And then I would start to go somewhere. My shrine little tracker would go off. I would go to that shrine, then get distracted because I'd see like a Korok seed. I just, like, there's so much about that game that just, like, engrossed me from top to bottom. There are so many little things that you continue to discover. Like the first time, you know, you're fighting somebody and then something catches on fire, and then you're like, everything's on fire. My sword is on fire. You know, my wooden stick is on fire. He's on fire. And then something comes out of nowhere and just drops a rock on everybody or something silly like that. There's just so much about that game that I feel like absorbed me for a good month, that I kept going back to it. I could play it anywhere with the Switch. But even if I couldn't play it on the Switch, like, I loved being able to play it on the Switch, but I would have sat down every night to play this. I made sure that I was, like, done, you know, like, I checked off every box and then said, okay, time to do the last thing, you know, the end of the game. You know, yeah. I wanted to make sure that, like, I was wringing out the last little bit of toothpaste before I officially, you know, did anything, and, you know, to complete the game, to end it, because I didn't want to end.
And when his wife left him, no one was surprised. But and when just, Anthony's mom coming. And dad died and he was not at the funeral, his brothers, well, they understood. For that was the year that Breath of the Wild consumed Anthony, and thus we lost him.
It's true.
The video game gods.
Is that your Morgan Freeman?
You know, it's your dad.
It's my dad.
Okay.
That's Mr. Kanata.
Yeah, it's a game that if somebody could wipe my memory and let me play it again fresh, I would do it again.
Eternal Sunshine of the Breathless Wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Anthony hitting himself with a brick, just like, this will work, this will work.
I gotta say, it makes me jealous to hear you talk about that. I keep meaning to go back to it. I think I've put 30 hours into it, but I've done like 5 hours worth of stuff in the game. And that's really my problem with it, is that I appreciate it. I always said it's a game that's more like going on a hike than it is visiting an amusement park, you know? And that's wonderful. It's beautiful. It's incredible. It's a wonderful idea for a game design, you know, and they really nailed it. And it's got so much in there that is fresh and interesting and unique. But I just felt every time that I picked it up, I was like, or every time I thought about picking it up, it was like, oh, I'm probably going to be standing at this cooking fire for a few minutes and like just picking stuff out of my menu and doing that. And then I'll probably wander around and I won't, you know, climb a thing and I won't be anything there. And I'll have used up 2 hours that I could have been doing something in Horizon or, sure, you know, here's the
but
storm.
The thing is, Jeff, there is always something there.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like for me, it's like in other games, you know, you see this cliff face and you think, I wonder if there's something up there. And you go up there and you're like, oh, no. But in Zelda, there's always something up there. Something, yeah, you know, it might not be what you think it is. I will also say that I went back to play Horizon after playing Zelda. I did finish Horizon before playing Zelda, but I went back to Horizon to clean up some side quest stuff. And I will say that the freedom of Zelda to just go up to anything and climb it versus Horizon looking for the yellow handhelds, I was like, no. I can't go back.
I can't go back. You know, I think, like, honestly, that's going to change the industry. I really do think it's going to make all of those old yellow handheldy games feel a little out of date. And I think that will have a lasting effect. But, yeah, you know, I love your love of Zelda. I'm glad it's your number one. I think it's going to be a shield for Christian who put it five. It would definitely be in my top 10, but it didn't make my top five. So, I'm just glad that you're representing, so I feel like at least somebody who's sane is here. Dinner. Yeah.
I'm here. I'm sane. I took my pills. I'm ready.
Christian, number one game of 2017. Hit me.
Well, speaking of glowy yellow handhelds, guys, this surprised me. But it is Uncharted Lost Legacy.
Wow. Number one?
Uncharted 4, if you remember last year, was my number two, being supplanted by my experience with The Last Guardian. Mm. But Uncharted The Lost Legacy is such a tight, and I'm glad they released it standalone because that allowed me to consider it. My random rules that might change for next year, but my rules going into this were no early access game. It needed to be a standalone release. So something like Forza Horizon 3 Hot Wheels, which I love, I couldn't consider for this.
But didn't Horizon 3 come out this year?
Forza Horizon 3? No, it was last year.
Oh, it was? Oh.
Yeah, the game itself. But so Uncharted Lost Legacy, it is tight in its narrative. It has set pieces that I think are some of the best set pieces in the – it takes like all of the best set pieces in the franchise and puts them all into one game. The way that they blew out the open world for, you know, that mission or that area, I thought was really cool and compelling. And for me, the biggest testament to the game really blowing me away is here is one of my favorite franchises of all time, right? So like, okay, this is, I'm going to be into this game from the get-go, but it's one of my favorite franchises of all time without my favorite character, right? It's like, here's the new Mario game where you don't get to play as Mario or anyone that you've really known or played with before. And the way that Chloe and Nadine interacted, what they brought to the narrative, their voice, their take on the world. I forgot that I don't even want to play as Nate anymore. Like, Nate just feels dumb. Nadine and Chloe played so well together. I want more of their adventures. And, it just blew me away, top to bottom, absolutely blew me away. And somehow I think they managed to make the Uncharted 4 engine look even better. Just visually stunning. And while, you know, I probably beat it in 9 hours, 10 hours or whatever, I felt like there was never a moment wasted and it was constantly taking my breath away. I absolutely loved it.
It is amazing. I think it does feel a bit like a greatest hits album, but it is gorgeous. It is fun. I think it actually is a better Uncharted game at the length it is, because it doesn't feel like it has some filler like some of the other Uncharted games do. There's, you know, you get to like the 11 hour mark, 12 hour mark in a Uncharted game and it feels like, oh, I'm still going, or, you know, like even the 9-10 hour mark, whatever. And this game feels a little more streamlined. It felt like it cut out the fat. I really liked it too. I don't think it may have made my top 10. Probably not. It probably wouldn't have made my top 10, but it is a top tier game of the year, a game that came out this year for sure.
What is your number one game of the year, Mr. Kanata.
I'm going to make everybody angry, but this is legit my game of the year. Legit.
Angry Birds?
Angry Birds. No. Lone Echo.
You just said that so you could be right about a prediction.
No, I swear to God, it is my legit game of the year. It is, but like I said, all my top three I wrestled with in the interchangeability. No one's going to be talking about Lone Echo but me in the world, and it is legit a game of the year. It is the best experience that I've had playing a video game this year. It is the freshest, newest, most interesting experience playing a video game this year. I killed zero people playing it. I killed zero anythings. It is a game that is completely thrilling and yet requires no murder. And I know that that may be a hippie tree hugger type of thing to say, but it's actually kind of refreshing. I have no problem, you know, killing things. I like shooters. I like.
Oh, wait, in video games.
All right, yeah, in video games. Is this being recorded? Definitely in video games. But no, I mean, I have no problems with violence in video games. I enjoy games with violence. Every other game on my list practically has it. But it was just so incredible to have this heart-pounding experience where that wasn't required. Like, somebody figured that out. And the game is gorgeous. It is jaw-dropping. There are moments in it. The first time you step out of the space station in Lone Echo, which, by the way, if you're not familiar, is a VR game. It came out on Oculus. And you step out from the space station that you spent several hours at the beginning of the game in, and then you step out into open space, and it is breathtaking. Breathtaking. And then things go crazier from there, and the game escalates. It has an incredible narrative that escalates all the way to the end. You keep having to do crazier and crazier things all the way up until the end. I couldn't believe the things I was seeing or the places I was going. It felt like being inside the best sci-fi novel I've ever read. It did things that I've literally never done in video games. I've never moved like I move in Lone Echo. It's you're purely weightless and you move by pushing off things. Just that alone felt incredible and unlike anything else. It is a top-tier presentation. It is truly my game of the year, and I absolutely adore it. And the fact that it did not win Best VR Game in any awards is, I think, speaks to how few people maybe played it, because it is transcendent. And it also has a multiplayer component. Like, it is being competed in as an esport. It got legs that way. The pure mechanisms that are introduced in the game, I think, are going to live on. Lone Echo, don't sleep on it if you've got VR. It is incredible.
It's Ready at Dawn, right? I believe is the studio.
Ready at Dawn, that's right.
Yeah, they make great games.
And I know everybody's going to make fun of me for picking a VR game, but I'm serious. Like, it was the best experience I've had with a video game in all of 2017. Period.
It's a great game. I think I didn't finish it, and I had two chunks where I played for it felt like an hour, and then I just didn't get to an autosave, and I went back, and after that happened twice, it was just hard for me to go back to, just because of the constant barrage of amazing releases that were coming out. But it's incredible, and what they managed to do with Locomotion, and I think you're right, like nailing that sense of presence, and then adding the weightlessness in a way that didn't make me nauseous where other space games had. Like, they did so much right that I do hope that other VR games look to this as how to kind of conquer that weightlessness, movement around a world where you're just kind of sitting, standing still. It's a triumph.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Yeah, I think so too. And they do a bold thing where you are the automaton, right? You are the robot. You play as the robot, but you
interact. I killed a lot of those, by the way. I don't know about you. I killed a lot of those.
You're thinking of Robo Recall?
No. I just kept dying, and I'd have to get a new one.
But how cool is it that you see, like, your corpse where it died? It's so rad. But you interact with a human being, and in VR, standing next to a human being that looks real and behaves in realistic ways and has nuance, that, I think, is an incredible thing to pull off, an audacious thing to even try. Like, oh, we're going to let you lean in close and just stare into the eyes of another human being. It's, I don't know, it's an amazing game. Lone Echo, my game of the year.
So is game of show Horizon?
I think it has to be. I think it has to be.
Because Anthony doesn't get a say, because even though he's on the show more than we are sometimes.
Yeah, I think the DLC game of the year. It's funny. I don't remember there ever being. Go ahead.
Well, based on let me as the outsider decide for you guys. It's Horizon.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I don't know if there's ever been a time where our game of E3 then became the next year's game of the year, but kudos to Horizon Zero Dawn for pulling that off.
God, I hope Spider-Man does. I hope Spider-Man does.
Me too. But Anthony, I'm so glad that you, I mean, literally like so many of the games on your top five, we haven't really even talked about on the show too much.
Sure.
So I love the fact that you had input. We're going to talk more about the games that didn't make our list, some other side categories, and then get to our top five dark horses right after this.
Wait, Christian won't like that. DLC's personal favorite games of the year. Based on an incomplete sampling.
I just love it. I know it's the third time I played it in the same show, but it's the only time of year we get to play it. So thanks again, Sean Madigan, for that bumper that I truly adore. All right. So neither Zelda nor Mario made my top five.
Yeah.
I know that's a bad thing. I really, really wrestled with that. I really almost put Odyssey instead of Mario plus Rabbids. But since it was a toss-up and I figured one of you would have Odyssey on your list and we'd get to talk about it anyway, I just wanted to surface Mario plus Rabbids. And I actually think I may have enjoyed Mario plus Rabbids more. I really think so.
Say, you know, we have a section of this show where we talk about games we want to surface.
Yeah, I know. But I knew you... But it's games that want to surface that nobody else is going to bring up, and I knew you guys would.
To be fair, Mario plus Rabbids was on my list of games to bring up if nobody talked about it.
Oh, good.
So
it's so good. It's so good.
I enjoyed. I had a great time with it. It's super surprising. I streamed it, and I had a lot of people come in that are going to be representative of, I think, certain gamers who are just going to look at it and go, "This isn't Mario," but it's not Mario, but it's a fun game.
Yeah,
it's not a Mario.
And I think that Odyssey was probably number six then. You know, like it is really close. And I think Zelda was in my top 10 somewhere as well. But
I got number 20.
Sure.
No, I mean, Zelda, I love it. I want to
top 10 somewhere like around like number 15.
Anyway, are there any other? Well, we'll get to our top five games that we want to, bring up. But I want to talk a couple of other categories that I think are just fun, silly categories. Like, for example, what is your biggest disappointment of the year? Do you guys have a biggest disappointment?
I can go if no one else has anything ready. I was on the 3-Bit Gaming podcast, so you can hear some other of like my Razzies, but I thought of it for this, and it's still true. 1-2 Switch. I'm
really?
Yeah, I'm because I think Wii Sports was so great. I think even Nintendo Land did a lot of good things for the Wii U. And I think I understand keeping costs down or whatever, but that it wasn't bundled, that it was a full price game. The mini games didn't have any really real staying power. And I think to your point, Jeff, that Nintendo or whomever, they didn't figure out all the other features of the Switch, like becoming selling points for doing all the zany and different things with it. Like if anyone was, it would have been Nintendo in 1-2 Switch or in that style of game. And I feel like even they were kind of like, you can eat a sandwich. You're milking a cow. Isn't that fun? And just like, it fell flat. I don't think it holds even as a party game, holding people's attention, but I love the concept of it. And I think Nintendo's done such good job with those types of games, even going, looking at WarioWare back in the day, that I think 1-2 Switch tries to kind of emulate the look and feel of in some respects. And the fact that it was such a big miss when everything else Nintendo touched was pure gold. I was disappointed. I really wanted to love it. And I feel like it was just hot garbage.
I feel like you made fun of it from the moment it was announced.
Yeah, from what they showed it is. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a disappointment. It was announced in 2017. It came out in 2017. It disappointed me in 2017.
Fair enough.
Sure.
Anthony, do you have a biggest disappointment?
My biggest disappointment is Friday the 13th.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say Destiny. Too.
Yeah. I knew you guys were going to think I was going to say Destiny. I really enjoyed playing Friday the 13th, but that game's servers were broken on so many levels. And so it was a game that was literally working against me. It was like, let me love you. let me love you. And it was like, I can't let, like, it. It,
don't you know that in the Friday the 13th universe, the first mistake you make is loving someone?
It's true. It's true. But it may have been, you know, how I played it. I played it with one of my friends, played it as a stream game, but I had so much fun. It's, I think, the superior game to Dead by Daylight because it's goofier. It's not as competitive and you just do silly stuff and. Just there are so many things about it that I enjoyed. I just like when, you know, Jason would come out of nowhere and all that stuff. And then they were not anticipating this, you know, turnout. And so you could not fill up a lobby. There were days where you just couldn't play a game. So it was a game that I actually liked playing and really enjoyed and had a good experience with. I just couldn't have it when I wanted to.
Were you on?
And that's why it was a disappointment. I was on PS4, yes.
Yeah, PC was bad as well, but I've heard PS4 was atrocious.
Yeah, PC was better, I think, partially because it was easier to put together, like, public lobbies, just because there was an easier way to, you know, like, tab into, you know, some sort of community and put a group together, and PS4 was harder. But, yeah, I really wanted to spend more time playing that game, and I did spend a decent amount of time. But it's just, like, it's a $30 game. There's it's so, you know, small on content, and then to just have the developers be like, yeah, sorry guys, we know there's a problem, but like we're trying, but that can only go so far. Yeah. That only lasts for so long before people are just like, I don't believe you. And at a certain point I had to jump off of it.
My biggest disappointment was Prey.
Sure.
And not because the game is bad. Like, it's not a bad game. It's just, it had so much potential. And I think that it didn't live up to that for me. I said this before, but I will restate it. I think the game world of Prey and so much of what you do in that game world is trapped behind this feeling that they needed to give you something scary to shoot every 15 seconds. And all of the potential. I mean, Prey could have been Lone Echo, I think. It could have been tons of fun things to do inside this world, exploring things, figuring stuff out, solving puzzles, doing interesting. The world is so fascinating. The narrative is so fascinating. I didn't need to shoot something every 15 seconds. And I thought that just dragged the game down and made it a lot less fun and made me disappointed. So that's why it's my biggest disappointment.
Yeah, probably the best, arguably the best, I don't know, whatever, like 10, 15 minutes of a video game. And you're like, oh, wow. Yeah. And then you're just shooting little goose spiders on the ground for another 20 hours.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately. All right. A couple of other categories we'll get to real quick. What about biggest surprise of the year? I think, Anthony, you already mentioned one that was a big surprise for you, but is there another big surprise?
I'm trying to think of what I would say that. Yeah. Nier was probably the biggest surprise for me, to be honest. Yeah. I had no interest and, you know, people said, play it and get the endings. And I said, okay, fine, I'll do it. And then I was like, okay, I really like this game. Conversely, people said, play it to Persona 5. I played like 30 hours of Persona 5 and was like, I'm not, this is not for me.
Yeah, me too, unfortunately. My biggest surprise is Assassin's Creed Origins.
Oh, what a great game.
Because I had just tapped out on the whole Assassin's Creed franchise. And there was a little voice inside my head that was hopeful that because they took a year off, maybe they would come back with something awesome. And then I heard rumblings of like, you know, before it came out, people were like, Assassin's Creed Origins is the Witcher in the Assassin's Creed universe. And I was like, you know, and it turned out to be exactly the case. And that's a game I'm still playing and still think about all the time. I'm like, oh, I could get a few hours in on Assassin's Creed Origins. It's
imagine
so
if it was on
good.
Switch.
Yeah, I'm surprised it isn't actually. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it is beautiful. The world is enormous. There's fun stuff to do all over the place. And it just gets rid of all those trappings of the Assassin's Creed universe that I had gotten real tired of by this point. So it feels like a real fresh take on it. And I hope its success bolsters that franchise and they continue in that direction.
Yeah, Stephen A. Rivers said mine in the chat. It's PUBG. I spent a lot of hours over the past couple of days playing 1.0 release because of my, it's arbitrary, but all rules for how you rank things are arbitrary. But for me, I needed a release to consider it. This year, I'll probably throw that out the window and consider anything. It's like, hey, can I buy it and play it? I can consider it for my favorite of the year.
Well, wait, so did you not consider PUBG even though it did hit a 1.0 before?
No, I did. That's what I'm saying. I spent a lot of, I probably put in like 8 hours since it went 1.0.
I'm a little surprised it didn't make your top five.
As am I.
It's top 10. It's not top five because it's two maps. Even with 1.0, it's still janky. Like the mode is so incredible, and like that feeling it gives you it is kind of unmatched in terms of like you go from boredom to the most intense, your hands are sweating moment of gameplay ever. But it still has enough problems getting into lobbies, getting a game started. I still get kicked, even with 1.0. And there's just not quite enough there for me right now. I think it will go on more as a mode than necessarily like this current iteration of the game. The desert map, I don't think is that great. I don't think the drops are that awesome. But I really enjoyed the game, and it's the biggest surprise. I mean, right, we came into 2017 looking at Destiny 2, Call of Duty, Battlefront 2, and here's this brand new shooter that began as a mod for this game I wasn't interested in that I play weekly with GPD now, right? Like, yeah. And it no one could have predicted what this game did. It's huge. It's huge.
Indeed. Great pick. How about most underrated game of the year? Do you guys have one? I have one. If you guys want me to start,
Go for it.
I know that this is. I think we'll get a little pushback on this, but we did a whole episode about it, and I think people thought we were maybe shilling for it. But I legit think the most underrated game of the year is Agents of Mayhem. I really do. I think that game is not bad at all. It is super underrated. People like threw it in the garbage, like it was terrible, and it's fun. It is fun. I mean, I didn't play it as much as I played Horizon Zero Dawn, but it is really an easy breezy fun experience that I thought was well made and did not deserve all of the crap that it got when it was released.
Yeah,
that's a good pick.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Cool.
Hard for most underrated. I feel like there were quite a few games that were underrated, but this is hard because I think it was well rated. I think it won an award at Game Awards, if I remember correctly. But I don't think people are talking about it in top five game of the year conversation enough, and I think they should. And it's Injustice 2. It didn't make my top five, but I think I talked about it when I started playing it again after I bought the complete edition or whatever. Like, it's six. It's like it's six, and it's banging at the door the more I play it. Just for all the things,
I think it's like fighting games for some reason don't get talked about as games of the year. I don't know. I think that for some reason they don't. But
I agree.
Is it good? It's so good.
And I think because people think fighting games, and to some level they do. It's like, well, it's competitive. It's how they view it. So you don't have the skill to do that. But like Destiny's competitive, but like it's just a fighting game. Destiny's just a shooter, right? It's like, but what Injustice is this wrapper for this loot game. And again, as we talked about the other week, like what those style Diablo loot grind games are, like how they keep pulling you in and what they're trying to do. And I think Injustice 2 does so much of it so right. And the characters they've added over the course of the year have all been really cool, really great additions. And I think it's the best single player fighting game ever made. And what NetherRealm has done in terms of create, and they've always been tinkering with things like that, with like a cart mode or chess, like battle chess in old Mortal Kombat, and like giving the single player non-tournament player a reason to keep playing a fighting game. And I think with this game, they nailed it. I really, yeah, really love Injustice 2.
I agree. Great, great pick.
Okay, I have two. One, I'm going to get so much hate for, so I'm just going to say it and then move on.
Okay.
I don't think Star Wars Battlefront 2 is that bad.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, I like playing the multiplayer.
We're still talking about it. Move on.
It's pretty, that's for sure.
Yeah, I actually like playing it. But I would say... The more
Anthony
underrated
Taormina, Star Wars Battlefront 2 is better than Destiny 2, confirmed.
Well, no. Don't start with that.
I do,
you know, enjoy playing it. If it had come out under different circumstances, I might have been more excited. Anyway.
We should also announce that Anthony was just hired as community manager for DICE. So congrats on that job and everything that comes with it.
Sure. Well, I think there are plenty of people out there that agree with me that are like, I like playing this game, but it's not cool to like this game, similar to Call of Duty.
That's true.
But I would say the underrated game, which is strange to me considering it, you know, its predecessor actually won awards, but I think Shadow of War is underrated.
Interesting. I think Christian will take offense to that, right?
I would take offense to it. Didn't click. I think they moved away from what I think made the first game so compelling. Sure. I don't think they added too much. I was like base building. And I was like, I just want more of the same. I want Shadow of War 2. Shadow of Mordor 2. I didn't need this. All this other stuff they did, I thought diluted the experience I had with the first game. But I agree. It's probably very underrated because I think a lot of people have probably spent a lot of time playing that game this year.
We're talking about for a lot of publications and whatever. It was a Game of the Year winner, nominee. A follow-up to that, that is just, you know, it's getting, I think it's getting swept aside by, you know, all these high profile games. And I, you know, to me personally, subjectively, you know, it's, I think that the other games are better, but I am surprised that it's not in more conversations because it is, you know, very familiar to the last game. And it's strange that all of a sudden I kind of had that feeling too, but I still enjoyed it that like it is the same game. So why aren't people loving it as much?
I think both of your most underrated games fell for the same problem, which is the loot box controversy.
Yeah, that is a good point for sure.
Yeah. All right. Unless there's any other categories that you guys wanted to bring up, were there any others that you wanted to throw in here?
I think we're good. Okay. I also have to pack tonight, so like you know.
Oh, let's get.
I don't want to deprive our audience, but I think we're good.
Let's move through our top five, whatever you want to call them, dark horses, diamonds in the rough, games that aren't our 6 through 10, but we would love to mention again before the end of the year, deserve another mention. We won't step through these like we did the fives. Just you can just say all five of your games and we'll have a short discussion and then move on. Anthony, you can start with your five games close to your heart.
Okay. Close to my heart. There's a game called The Sexy Brutale that's like pretty good. Little Nightmares, cool platformer. Getting Over It. Probably the most frustrating game of the year, but also very satisfying. Hollow Knight, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people have been talking about that
platformer
game. Yeah.
And my final one is Neo, kind of like Ninja Gaiden, Dark Souls-y game.
So say all five of those again, real quick.
Neo, Hollow Knight, Getting Over It, The Sexy Brutale, and Little Nightmares.
Awesome. I think I've played one of those. So that's awesome.
I think you would really like Sexy Brutale.
Everybody keeps telling me that. It's made by somebody that made something else this year, right?
Yes, they made – oh, man, what is the game? I'd have to Google it.
Because I was like, oh, I didn't know those guys made that.
They made another game this year, and I cannot think of it.
Yeah. I'm sure the chat will save us. Christian, what is your five games close to your heart?
Observer, which we talked about on this show.
Right.
I love that aesthetic, and it got me playing a horror game in a way that only Resident Evil's had before, right? Where it pulled me into the world of the cyberpunk aesthetic, and I thought what it did was really cool. Observer, I heard it had performance issues on console. I ran it pretty well on PC. I really enjoyed it. Golf Story, I think if this was a Nintendo game, I think it would have been Game of the Year material for a lot of other people. Like, had it, what if it was Mario Golf? Like, it just... If you love Mario Golf Advanced, like what Golf Story does, it's so good. It's so very good. You mentioned it already, Assassin's Creed Origins. I do think it's worth mentioning here as a game that more people should talk about. It came out on one of the worst days of video game history. And
or best, depending on your point of view.
The worst day for it to come out. But it's a triumph, and it's absolutely incredible. If you overlooked it, pick it up. It's really, really good. Another game that came out the same day, Wolfenstein 2. It's combat I think is not great, but it has a point of view and it commits to telling its story in such an awesome and refreshing way. And while it might not resonate for everybody, it goes for it. It swings for the fences. And I think it gets it more than it doesn't. And the issues it handles with the way it does and the way it's able to do so many things that other games would mess up one of them. I think people should play Wolfenstein 2, play it on easy. And then Sonic Mania. We got a great Sonic game, guys. Like the Sonic cycle, it bit us in the butt again with Sonic Rush just being absolute crap. But Sonic Mania is so good. And you can play it on your Switch. So pick it up. It's so good.
Yeah, great list. My five, close to my heart. I feel like if these games came out just in an alternate universe where these are the only games came out, I would be like, this is an amazing year of video games. And yet completely overshadowed. Probably wouldn't. It's an amazing year. It's an amazing year. So here we go. Dead Cells, which is an incredible pixel-esque sort of, it's sort of in the same place in my heart that Rogue Legacy lived, when that game came out. But Dead Cells, I think, is even prettier and deeper and really, really cool. Hand of Fate 2. I loved the first Hand of Fate. Hand of Fate 2, I hope people aren't overlooking it. It's a cool mashup between like a tabletop game and a really cool third-person action game like Batman Arkham City. Hand of Fate 2 should be played by more people. It's awesome. Hob. I know I keep talking about Hob. Buy Hob. Play Hob. If you like Zelda, old-school Zelda games, Hob has an incredible take on Zelda. It is a gorgeous aesthetic. It is a fun game. It's clever. It expresses its story without just a single written piece of text. It's an amazing game, and it's sad that it brought down a studio because nobody bought it. Battle Chasers Night War, which I absolutely loved this year, turn-based Japanese style role-playing game, but done by a Western studio in a very Western way. Awesome art again, a combat system that it just never gets old, only gets more and more interesting to me. I could just do that combat system over and over and over again, as you do in the game. And it's constantly giving you interesting decisions to make. I love Battle Chasers Night War. And then a game you guys have heard me talk about over and over and over again. Also, Dino Frontier. I know it's a VR exclusive, but it is truly delightful. It's a game that has soul, which is a unique thing to say for a video game. Most games don't, I think. Dino Frontier is a delight. It's a real-time strategy game that you play with your hands, and you get to make people ride dinosaurs and cultivate dinosaurs and do physical things with your hands to manipulate a real-time strategy game. The fact that more people don't talk about the game is a crime. And the fact that it's not out on Oculus or Vive is a crime. I'm sure Sony has some exclusivity with it. I hope that expires soon and we can see it on the rest of the VR platforms because it deserves that. I know that's five, but I wish it just happened right at the end of the year. But I think Gora Goa is going to continue to be very special for me as I continue to play through it. So don't sleep on Gora Goa either. That is a great, great game that you can actually play on iOS. Or Switch, for that matter. So, guys, that is it. That's our 2017 look back. How do you guys feel? How do you feel, Anthony, about what we've said?
I mean, this was an odd year in the sense of I expected Zelda to blow me away, and Zelda blew me away, and I expected Destiny 2 to be my game that I play into the new year, and it's not. So
yeah, wow.
You know, it's everybody's going to be saying this on probably any podcast or any end of the year thing. This was an insane year for games, in many different ways, and in different years, some of the games that I think didn't make our top fives would be number one.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, but they had some stiff competition for sure.
It speaks to how great a year it was that we had so little crossover on our top fives, and that our other five games were so eclectic and interesting, and so many great experiences this year. I mean, really, we're in a golden age of video gaming for sure.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, and also I love my Switch. I don't know if you guys noticed. Zelda, Mario Odyssey, Golf Story, Sonic Mania, I'm playing on Switch. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, my daughter and I have logged hours in that game. Floor Kids, Zen Pinball. I carry it with me everywhere, and it's I was at the Comedy Store, and Mike Lawrence was there, and he had like his in his front pocket of his sweatshirt, and he was like, went up and said hi, and he's like, oh, sorry, I got my Switch. I know. And I'm like, dude, I got my Switch. What are we going to play? it's what a triumph. What a year. What a year.
Knowing you, Christian, and having even just the slightest experience of your comedy grind, I could have predicted the Switch was going to be your best friend. It was perfect for you, you know?
It's what I wanted the Vita to be. It's a portable console that has a full control scheme, right? And it's so good. It's so good.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how next year shapes up for you, Anthony, as the guy who's played every game that came out, because you're going to be a dad next year, right?
Yes, next year.
Everything will change.
It's true. Everything will change, except nothing will probably change because I don't sleep at night already. So it's like,
oh, that's convenient.
It's
also,
that's good planning ahead.
we'll see. Yeah, definitely. I tried to squeeze every game I could out of this year, knowing that there are a lot of games next year that I really want to play that, you know, maybe are going to be harder to play. There's some crazy games coming out next year that I hope I can devote as much time to.
Say this, you guys have some life events next year. So do I. My youngest is starting preschool in January, so I will be the guy.
Yeah, you pick up that slack. Play. Yeah,
I have a feeling I might have other things that will dominate all of my time, unfortunately.
Me both,
if not,
brother.
I'll be the guy.
Well, it has been an awesome 2017 here on the podcast. Next week, it'll just be Christian and myself. We'll be looking back and doing our state of the show, as well as looking forward and giving predictions on 2018 and talking about all the games that we know about and what we're hoping for over the next calendar year. So definitely stay tuned for that. But I do want to say, especially because this episode that you're listening to will be coming out. We're here in the past, but when you're listening to us, it will be Christmas Day or later, depending on when you download it. So I hope you have had a wonderful holiday, whichever holiday you celebrate. And I really appreciate you listening to us at any point this year, whether you just came to us recently or you've been listening throughout 2017. Thank you very much for spending your time with us and downloading the show. It means a lot to us. And Anthony Taormina, thank you for always being our go-to guy, and thank you for being here tonight. It's been fun as always.
Yeah, it was great for having me, and I want to say thank you to all the readers that have reached out to me on Twitter or wherever, and you know, we've had discussions, good or bad, and you know, you said, "Oh, I disagree," or "I agree with you." You guys are awesome. It's good to feel you know, even a slight part of the community that it represents DLC. It's fun.
Very cool. Tell folks where they can see your work on the internet and keep up with you.
Well, I'm editor-in-chief of GameRant.com, so you can see a lot of the things I write about. I'm being very critical of Destiny lately, so if you are, you know, if you are on that bandwagon, you can hear me voice my own thoughts, but I write a lot of different content there as well. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/AntTormina, which is spelled AntTormina. And I stream pretty regularly, pretty much every night on Game Rant's Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/GameRant.
Christian, buddy, it's been a good year. Where can people keep up with you? I know not on the social medias, at least not until February, right?
Well, you can, and you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. It's at Spicer. Instagram is Christian_Spicer, but I am taking a social media break until, February 2018, but you can still go there. And on those, I have links. Email me if you want to talk to me. I've had a couple of great emails, and christian.spicer@gmail.com is a great one to use. Just put something in the subject line.
So Christian, you thought that social media took too much of your life up. So you thought, let's do a long form discussion with the people where they can write entire emails at you now.
I would love to be buried under thoughtful, long form emails from people. Yes, that sounds great to me. That sounds fantastic. Honestly, I do a parenting podcast called Department of Parenting. You can find that at departmentofparenting.com for all the links on that. And at least 20 more minutes. My friend since high school, Jeff Wood, who's on Twitter at the Overhead Wire, we did a 40-minute spoiler discussion on The Last Jedi, and we both love it. Spoiler to that conversation. But you can find that at patreon.com/Christian Spicer. And then I think that's probably good, man. Just, you know, reach out, keep in touch. Let's have fun. And here's to a better 2018 for every. I hope 2017 was great, and let's make 2018 even better, right? We can do it. Let's do it.
I think we should. You have lots of other ways to see and hear me, should you so desire, including my new Hulu show. If Woo-hoo! You have Hulu, why not give it a shot? It's all about esports, and it's called Defining Moments. It's actually called ESL Defining Moments. But you can search for Defining Moments on Hulu, and my smiling face will pop up. I've been getting such great feedback, and I appreciate everybody who listens to the show. If you check out Defining Moments, please send me a tweet. I'm at Jeff Cannata. I'd love to know what you think of it. I think it's pretty darn good, and I'm hoping we get a chance to make more. So if you get a chance to see it, it would definitely help that endeavor. So that's called Defining Moments. It's on Hulu. It's all about esports.
I keep thinking it's English as a second language. It's not.
Me too.
I know. In English. It's not you teaching someone Spanish or English.
And Defining Moments also doesn't sound like it wouldn't necessarily be. Like, it doesn't betray that thought. It just, you know, you're like, oh yeah, a moment you defined in a second language. Okay, I get it. No, it's esports right. League.
It's good. Watch it. It's really well done. It's really cool. It's like 30 for 30. I think you've said that a bunch, but just to reinforce it, it's compelling. It's compelling, especially if you love games.
Thanks. You can also listen to me talk about games every single day, and I'm not taking a day off for the holidays. No, no. Over on Newest, Latest, Best, which is a podcast I do every single day. It's only 10 minutes. Keeps you up to date. Right now, we're getting lots of listeners calling in with their top games of the year. We're doing top threes, and one of the games has to be a game you think nobody else is going to talk about. Ooh. And it's been a blast. We're going to do that throughout the end of the year. Lots of people sending in their call-ins, so check that out. You can find that anywhere you get podcasts, at or at anchor.fm/NLB for Newest, Latest, Best. A new slash filmcast just went up with 2 more hours talking about Star Wars. So that's 4 hours of Star Wars talk that we've had on the slash filmcast. You can listen to those as well. And we have concerns at wehaveconcerns.com. All right, guys, that's it. This is our last episode of 2017. As I said, we'll be back, I think, scheduled for the very first day of January of 2018, a brand new tomorrow. But until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.